Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Patti Smith is often described as the poet laureate of punk. I actually just described her that way in the previous sentence. But Patti is much more than that. She's also a writer, a musician, a visual artist, and a painter. Music journalist Karen Rose knows all about Patti's talents. Karen is the first woman to write a book about Smith. It's called Why Patti Smith Matters. And it turns out there are a lot of reasons why she matters. She's had a huge impact on rock and roll, visual art, and prose. Check out her beautiful memoirs, Just Kids and Year of the Monkey. Beta's resident musicologist, Steve Gotcher, talked with Karen Rose about the life and work of Patti Smith. He asked Karen, what is it about Patti's approach to the arts that makes her so unique?
She is not precious about it at all. She views it as work, just like going to a factory is work. And she just shows up every day and does it and doesn't pretend that it's magic and doesn't try to glamorize it or be cute about it. She's just there doing the work.
The V of lightning licks all over them. The end, the great rhythm lit for them. Oh, get me out of here, honey. White lightning, kick my senses away. I'll kick the bottle, baby, if you just take me away.
What are the events that in Patti's life that set her on an artistic path?
Her family was working class, but they were very interested in art, whether it was opera or classical music. You know, she tells the story of her parents taking she and her siblings to the Philadelphia Museum of Art and her first encounters with art in person. She grew up with it being an important thing, and she just kept going.
Robert Mapplethorpe is an important person in Patti's early days in New York and wonderfully chronicled in her book Just Kids, which she won a National Book Award for in 2010. How did their relationship influence both of their growth as artists?
They supported each other as artists. They embraced the pursuit of art as a lifestyle wholeheartedly, and no matter what direction one person was going in, they were there supporting them, which is kind of in this kind of unconditional, beautiful, naive, enthusiastic, unironic way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the Chelsea Hotel in New York City is a pivotal point where she met a lot of people. Who are some of the other people that influenced her?
She met Bob Newworth, if we're in the Dylan space. William Burroughs often drank at El Quijote, and she used to, you know, she loved sort of taking a tipsy Bill Burroughs outside and putting him in a cab safely. She also met Janis Joplin. She met the archivist Harry Smith. It's really kind of an endless list of people and things she was there for. You know, she tells the great story about being in El Quijote the night before Woodstock when all the bands were staying in the Chelsea. And, you know, and she was just like, yeah, this is my local. I belong here.
Who would you say is probably the most important collaborator and friend for her over her early days?
I'm going to say it was Mapplethorpe,
yeah.
Because that unconditional support, you got to keep working, you got to keep writing, whatever it is. And he really, I don't want to say goosed, but he did in that loving way push her towards, you need to read your poetry in public. You should think about putting music behind your poetry. Maybe you should think about singing. You know, he financed the recording of her first single. I don't think it gets stronger than that.
Horses is Patti's first record album that came out in 1975, and it was a great success. What was it that made this album such an outstanding debut?
That's a good question. I think it's just a perfectly formed piece of art that represents Patty as a writer, as a performer, as a woman leading a band. And it also pulls in the strengths of the members of her band. You know, Richard Soul, as a pianist, had the ability to follow her anywhere. Lenny Kaye also brought in, you know, the early rock and roll and the pieces of that both he and Patty loved. J.D. Dougherty, her drummer, manages in the 70s to be there with a light touch. And of course, Ivan Kral was, you know, again, a classic rock kind of guy who wasn't taken aback by having to take orders from a woman.
Mm-hmm. And seemingly none of them were, which was kind of unusual back in those days.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Patty released three more records in the 70s, Radio Ethiopia, Easter, and Wave. And on Easter, she's criticized for the cover art. Why was that?
Because you can see her unshaven armpit hair. And she had, as part of her contract with Arista Records, complete creative control both over the music and the visuals. And to their credit, Arista said, well, this probably means that you're not going to be placed prominently in stores in the South. But she went ahead with it anyway.
There are several great songs on this record, including Because the Night, co-written with Bruce Springsteen, and there's Ghost Dance. After the release of Wave in 1979, Patty stopped performing and didn't release another record until 1988. What happened in those years?
She got married to her long-distance boyfriend, who was Fred Sonic Smith of the MC5. She moved to Detroit, and the two of them had a relationship that wasn't long distance. They got married and they had two kids. They were also, you know, living a life. She was still working, she was still writing, she was still studying, but her primary focus was, and Fred's primary focus was, raising their kids.
And how did the music world react to Patty suddenly stopping performing?
A lot of people viewed it as some sort of betrayal. People just couldn't understand turning her back on fame and walking away from playing a football stadium in Italy to, you know, 60,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Was there any kind of reaction because she was a woman quitting a career in music?
I think it's tied into all of that. It was considered sort of letting the feminist side down, but by mostly men who would be like, I thought she was a feminist. How she's just going to give up and get married and raise kids. She never said she was a feminist. And I think that she was held to the same standard as a woman as she was for her entire career. There were people whose expectations she did not live up to, and they thought that they were in charge of determining, and this was just another one.
Right. And then in 1988, Patty returned to music with Dream of Life, which really wasn't received that well with critics, but it did produce a wonderful anthem called People Have the Power. What can you tell me about that song?
I love Patty's story about this, which is she was cooking in the kitchen, and Fred walked in and said, people have the power, write it. And she set to this task. She started studying speeches of the great orators, and she talked with her trusted friends and colleagues and put this beautiful anthem together that has become something that is being sung in protest marches, and slogans from it are appearing on protest signs.
Well, after the death of her husband, Fred Sonic Smith, in 1994, Patti started her journey back into music and began recording and touring in 96. And she recorded 5 albums of music until 2007. 96's return debut, Gone Again, is a tour de force with so many great songs. One of the standouts is Beneath the Southern Cross. What do you think of that song?
Beneath the Southern Cross is the best of the old elements of the original Patti Smith group and her strength and her power today. It's improvisational, it's emotional, it pulls the audience in. She can use it to support any particular sentiment she's thinking of. I remember seeing her do it in Paris on Arthur Rimbaud's birthday. I really feel like the entire audience levitated off the floor a few inches. It's never the same, and it's just this tremendous moment both for her and for the band, because they're coming together, they're supporting each other, they're creating this sort of blob of rock and roll energy, and it's an amazing thing that I don't think she gets nearly enough credit for in terms of her power as a live performer.
In 97, she released Peace and Noise, which is another strong album. But I want to talk a little about Spell, her improvisational adaptation of Allen Ginsberg's Footnote to Howl. What are your thoughts on that piece?
It's a tremendous piece of work. The music came from Oliver Ray, who was a new member of the band. And Lenny Kaye is quoted as saying he likes the way Oliver hears things. You know, he was several generations younger, so he was bringing a different audible sensibility to the band. And that's another incredibly powerful number that she can use to raise energy and pull the band together. There's a really strong improvisational element of it.
Her last studio album was all cover tunes, and I think her version of Hendrix's Are You Experienced and the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter are great. Why do you think she wanted to do a cover album?
So they needed something to put out after she got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, was finally inducted, and they had hoped it would be a live record, but that's something that Patti and Lenny have talked about over the years and just haven't made happen. And the element of a new record that takes her the longest is writing the lyrics. So if you do a cover record, you don't have that particular barrier. So that was why she went in that direction. Some of the songs she'd already been covering, you know, Lenny and Patti are some of the biggest rock and roll fans that are out there. So it made sense, but it's delightful. I love Gimme Shelter.
Oh, a storm is threatening my love today. If I don't get some
I think that it's full of love and respect, and, you know, she was excited about it.
Yeah. What do you think Patti Smith's legacy is in music and art?
She is the natural successor to Dylan. She's the one who continued carrying the torch of poetry and the beats and a little bit of, you know, psychedelia and moved it forward. She was the first artist out of CBGB's to get signed to a record contract, and that means something. And then she came back, and she's been more prolific in the second act of her artistic life, public artistic life, than she was at the beginning.
Karen Rose, thank you so much for talking to us today. Your book, Why Patti Smith Matters, is excellent, and we look forward to more from you. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Karen Rose is the author of Why Patti Smith Matters. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Cristela Alonso, Sloan Crosley, Karen Rose. Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRbeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Look, I am not going to die on a bridge so that you can feel like some big man on a bike.
The show was engineered by Tyler Ditter.
Can I just say again how very, very important your work is?
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
It's amazing. A man with such innovative vision can be so short-sighted.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
If he seems too good to be true, he probably is.